All right, hi, I'm Mandy. I'm a food addict and a compulsive overeater, among other addictions. I'm from Broomfield, so pretty local. And I'm going to talk about acceptance of the treatment of this disease. So we're going to talk for, well, I'll talk for about a half hour, and then you guys will have 15 minutes to do Q&A. So just kind of putting you in the structure of this. Trying to coordinate all this. So I want to first talk about how this is a disease that is... that to me, addiction is a disease of the mind and the body and the spirit. There's a physical allergy. So for me, I'm allergic to certain things that cause a craving. You know, the flour, the sugar. For me, that's what it is. Not for everybody. But also the problem centers in my mind. So I have to work with my mind. And then there's a spiritual solution. So I want to talk about what that spiritual solution is in very tangible, practical ways. Because to me, like, that's why we're here. Like, I can hear a lot of people talk about food and all that, but I want to hear, like, how do I get well? What's the solution? How do things get better and change? That's why I'm here. So I'm assuming that you guys have already talked about page 417, the acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. Has anybody read that in their workshop so far? Okay, does anybody have a big book that you want to read that? I think it's page 417. And while somebody looks that up, I also wanted to talk about pages 30 and 31. That we're not normal with food. And one of my favorite analogies is when it talks about we're like men who have lost their legs. So that is a disease of addiction that we have, that literally when it comes to food, there's a part of my brain that's broken that doesn't function very well. To give you a little bit of background, I came into program in 2002 when I was 19 years old. I'm 36 now. And I was halfway through college, full-blown eating disorder, probably was 50 or 60 pounds heavier than I am currently now, and I don't know because I didn't want to know my top weight, and I'd always been overweight. I just thought there are overweight people and there's regular people, and I had no idea that I was an addict until I put the food down and saw just how much I was consuming. So I came into OA, got a sponsor. She set me up with a food plan, set me up with the tools, started working the steps, and the program works. Not to say life is perfect, but the program works, and I want to go into how it works. So does somebody have those pages now on acceptance? I'll just paraphrase it. It talks about how acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. And there's a saying in it you'll hear of awareness, acceptance, and action. I think we're told action is a magic word in this program, that we as compulsive people, we need to do healthy action. I think that's what part of our addiction is, that constant needing to be in action. But first, we have to preface that with awareness and acceptance, because otherwise, if I'm just jumping from awareness to action, it's not going to be that effective because I'm just being reactive. So having a foundation of prayer, doing step work, having the tools in place. Let's see. So we're like amputees when it comes to food, that there's a part of my brain that's broken, and I acknowledge that. I can't eat normally. I can't eat spontaneously. Some people can in program. I'm one of the kind of the hardcore addicts that needs a lot of structure. My food is very black and white. It's committed to my sponsor. I have a lot of structure around it, and I'll go into that a little bit. And not everybody needs that, but I definitely need that. But that's so helpful to me because it's not like if I try harder, my legs will grow back, or if I just could will myself, I could walk normally again. I acknowledge that I'm an amputee. There's part of my brain that's broken. So that's my prosthetic device is you guys and my sponsor and the tools and the steps. And then I can walk around and function pretty normally in this world. But without that, I'm just going to be in the same position that I was. All right, so I'm going to talk about the tools, and I think a lot of the workshops have already addressed the tools, but for me, I'm going to just practical ways of how I use the tools, because that, to me, is what got me abstinent. So if you're struggling and you're having a tough time, and it's like, what is it going to take? To me, like, the tools, gain a sponsor, gain a food plan, was the game changer. So I'll talk specifically about each tool and how it treats the disease, and how that looks like in my daily life. So tool number one is a plan of eating. This is what works for me. OA itself endorses no specific food plan, but it helps save my life, so I'm going to pass it on. If it works for you, that's great. I eat 3 meals a day that are weighed and measured. I don't eat in between meals. My food is very simple, very black and white. I write it down the night before, and that's what I commit to my sponsor in the morning, and that's what I eat, no more, no less. No flour, no sugar, no sweeteners. I don't do caffeine. So if that seems really rigid, like, from the outside looking in, to me, it sounded rigid, but when I tried it, it turned out to be freedom, and it turned out to create a healthy weight. So I would say if people are skeptical and they think it might work for them, don't knock it till you try it. But again, whatever works for you, because OA has a bunch of different ideas on that. But I want to give you like practical help that might help you. And then sponsorship. My abstinence did not start till I got a sponsor and accepted that. And that was hard, you know, just saying to somebody what I was going to eat felt very vulnerable and very, like, almost childish. Like, why can't I just be an adult and feed myself? I have to tell this person what I'm going to eat? Like, this seems kind of crazy. But what I was doing was not working. I was nonstop binging. I was scared to be hungry by the end of my eating because I knew it would turn into a binge. So I was like, all right, I'll just try it her way. And I did, and it worked. And also, that's a still tricky one, too, with sponsors always trying to remain humble and teachable. Because after a while, you can start to think, oh, well, I know how to do this. I got this, you know, which is not true. Always be humble and teachable. And still to this day, like, that's a thing that I always need to work on. Not to fear my sponsor and not to make her my higher power either, but she's a tool and she's a person and she's wise and is objective and can speak truth into my life. And she knows me. She's been my sponsor for 14 years now, or maybe 15 years now. And she knows me. Like, I never met her in person. She's been over the phone. And we'll talk about that. I know. Who knew? It works. It works over the phone. She lives in a different state. I'm in a community of folks that we make a lot of phone calls. And so I met her over the phone. And she lives in a different state. And she became my sponsor. And she's been my sponsor now for 15 years. And it's not dependent on her, but it's dependent on having a sponsor. But it does work, and she knows my patterns. She can call me on my stuff. She can say, Mandy, like, you've been here before, or, like, I don't think that's a good idea. And then meetings. I go to 3 meetings a week, and those are the same meetings. The reason I do that is so people get to know me. For me, and we'll talk about this in the next session about virtual meetings, and my 3 meetings a week, 2 are over the phone, and then 1 is both in person and over the phone in Broomfield. And I show up on time. I come early. I stay late. I do service. I don't mess around. That's where the walls come down. And what a gift that we have a place to go to where we know each other and we all have the same issues. And so that's actually like a gift, sometimes, like, it's, oh, I wish I could do X fun activity instead of going to the meeting. But I know today that because my life revolves around program, I have a life. So if it weren't for those meetings, I wouldn't be here. So we have plan of being, sponsorship meetings, telephone. So I referenced before, I come from a community of folks who make a lot of phone calls. So in addition to my regular sponsor calls, I also talk with 3 people a day in program. So I mean, that's to reach out, see how they're doing, to talk about what's going on with me, to do step work if it's a step sponsee calling. But this is really a disease of isolation. And you might have heard people say, like, my disease wants to kill me, but first it wants me alone. And I can tell that if I feel like I don't want to talk to anybody, I mean, sometimes I'm an introvert, so sometimes I just need to recharge and take a break, and that's okay. It's okay to, like, shut the phone off for that reason. But if it's like, I don't want to tell anybody what my plan is for the day because they'll say something that will make me have to change my plan, and I just wanted what I wanted to do, then I'm like, alert, like, I need to talk about that. And also, like, to see how somebody else is doing, because my husband said the other day, I can easily get into, like, depression and self-pity. And he's like, you look sad. I bet you're thinking about yourself again. I'm like, yeah, it was true. I was thinking, like, woe is me. I've had this issue with my foot for over a year now, and I'm so frustrated. And I was like, I get so discouraged about it. And he's like, are you thinking about that again? And I'm like, I was. you're brilliant. But just to think about somebody else for once and to see how somebody else is doing it, I can be, like, bummed about my foot, and then somebody tells me how her son has cancer, and I'm like, that puts things in perspective, right? So what are we at? Writing? Yeah. I write them my food at night, make sure it's in the house, write gratitude. Step work is super important for writing. If I have an amend to make, people taught me to write it out before I make it, run it by my sponsor, don't cause more harm in making my amends. And they also taught me a technique that, for example, my dad died 10 years ago now, 11 years ago. But in making him, I had made an amend to him and read a letter to him at his graveside. But then when I went through this thing where I had more step work I felt like I needed to do on that, like, I just felt like I still had a bunch of resentments and baggage I was carrying around. And it was impacting what I thought. I didn't realize it until I've only been married a couple of years, and I didn't realize it until I got married, and then it was impacting my marriage because I realized I had all these expectations about what a man is and what a family should be, and all this junk was there. So anyhow, my sponsor helped me write the letter to him and write things out as if he were still there. And I thought, well, he's dead. I'm just going to say everything and spill all my junk on him and then read that to God. And you can do that too. That's fine, probably. But she taught me how to write a letter such that if he were there in person, what would I say to him, and learn to have appropriate amends. And that was really useful to learn how to do that. But either way, it's probably okay. The point is you're talking to God. Let's see, what else for writing a letter to God in the morning. So these are all things that move me from the disease of negativity to an acceptance, you know, and that I talk with you guys, I feel a part of, I have a fellowship. Literature, I read at least a page of the Big Book at night. We have such amazing literature, like the OA 12 and 12, that it specifically talks about food. I mean, that's so helpful. Instead of just, the Big Book is amazing, like I'm definitely a Big Book thumper, but I'm grateful that we also have those supplements to help us with, it shows how insanity shows up for food addicts, and it is crazy. Like, I mean, for me, if somebody said, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. I'm not a gambler, but if they said, like, I spent $1,000 because my boss got mad at me, I'd say, that's crazy. But if somebody said, like, I ate 1,000 calories because my boss got mad at me, I'd say, that makes sense to me, you know? So, like, that it deals specifically with food is so helpful. Like, I know the insanity. I've eaten out of the garbage. Like, no joke, you guys. I've tried to puke. I've exercised bulimic stuff. By the end, it was like everything turned into a binge, even if it was healthy this and blah, 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 that. Also, like, this is really a disease, and not just, oh, that's a cute term that we use to personify it. Like, I can feel when I break out in a rash of resentment. I can feel when I'm like, oh, something happened. I just got super depressed. And some people, it's like a clinical medical thing that needs medication. That's an outside issue. But there's one time I was going through some hard stuff, like mental health stuff just off. And my sponsor said, like, Mandy, I want you to double up on your phone calls. And so I took it seriously. And I did that literally. And I made 6 phone calls a day instead of 3. And it snapped me out of it. Like, it took a couple weeks. And I just kept doing that. And I don't know when I turned the corner. But later on, like, I don't remember, the depression wasn't there anymore. And again, that's not a solution for everything. So don't think I'm saying make 6 phone calls and you'll have a perfect life. But so the literature is super helpful. Action plan, that to me is the tools. But people in program, like, taught me how to get things done, like write a list of things that you need to do and then organize them by due dates. And I thought, what? Like, honestly, my strategy in college, I had this slogan I thought was so funny that I made up, and it was, procrastination promotes efficiency. Like, if you have 1 hour to get something done, you got to get it done. But that's not how I applied it. It was ridiculous. Like, my plan was, I want to do the whole world and solve the whole world today. The most important things I'm going to put off till the end, because that guarantees that I'll get everything done. Because if I do the non-important things first, then everything's going to get done, because I'm going to hit crisis mode for the important things. Like, this is my way of life, which is insane. But people taught me, like, how to have an action plan. I can one of my other issues, well, I'll tell you, my big 3 are food, relationships, and exercise. Those are, like, the big, and relationships shows up with, like, weird intimacy stuff. If you feel like I'm socially awkward, you're right. If you feel like, why, if I talk to her after the meeting, did she suddenly get shy and weird and want to leave the room quickly, you're right. So with exercise, I can definitely overdo exercise. That's partly why my foot is still injured. So now, in addition to committing my food, I commit my exercise to my sponsor and a couple other people to hold me accountable so I don't do too much. And they can say, like, Mandy, like, your foot's injured. Why do you want to go do a 5K? I don't know. It makes sense to me, right? So action plan to just put me back in reality. Anonymity. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. Like, carry the message, not the messenger. For me, I don't tell who my sponsor or sponsees are, although in other fellowships, I don't care. They just freely say who it is. So, but the point is, like, not to get into personalities. And then service. People taught me solidly that my most important service is getting and staying abstinent. That's why we're here. That's why we come. That's why we stay. Keep the main thing. Don't forget that. Like, we can do charity. We can do fundraisers, whatever, but, like, I'm a food addict. I need this program. I need to be here in this organization and not to mess with that. And not to deter anybody from doing higher levels of service, but I've seen people do crazy amounts of service for events like this and break their abstinence over it. Like, they got so exhausted and so worn out that they just ended up eating. I'm like, keep the main thing the main thing. Like, we're here to stay abstinent, get sober with food so we can carry that hope to other people. And so then I want to talk, how are we doing on time, by the way?
We're doing great.
Okay.
15 minutes and 30 seconds.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Okay, I'm going to jump into the steps. And there will be opportunity at the end if you guys have questions about the tools. I know other workshops have addressed the tools and the steps. I'm going to talk to you about my experience of working with the steps and how acceptance shows up there. So I'm just going to go step by step. Step one, accepting that I'm powerless. I'm okay with that with food now. Like, I've had my grief with it, and I've had, like, why can't I be normal? And in the beginning, I was like, okay, I can't have flour and sugar, but can I still smoke pot, you know? Some acceptance around, like, when it comes to food, I can't. I'm not normal. I'm used to that now. Like, other people's food, for the most part, like, look like it's like cardboard. I mean, I'm aware that that cardboard could kill me, but it's like I don't fear getting through the day abstinently. I know today God is on my side. I'm gonna be sober with food today. I have a plan. If something comes up, I call my sponsor. Like, if my food were to spill or rot or whatever, like, I know what to do in those situations. Any circumstance, whether traveling, at weddings and holidays, through surgery, on the day I got married, you know, whatever the situation is, like, there's a way to stay abstinent through it. And then accepting that there is a God who can restore me to sanity. And one of my difficult things that I still have trouble with is, and this might sound weird, but believing that God is good. And if I looked at the facts of my life, I should easily come to that conclusion. Like, I don't know, but sometimes I'm like, well, God, why are you so mean? Why don't you just fix this? I think I still have God as a genie expectations, that if I pray the right prayer, I can make him do what I want him to do. But that God can restore me to sanity, and accepting that God is God and I am not. I think a big piece of my addiction, or addiction in general, is wanting control, wanting to get that power, and we're looking for it in our substance of choice. If I wasn't allergic to food, I would still be looking at that behavior in some other way. Believing that God is God, and accepting God, that it's God, like, how do I say this? The big book says God is the manager. Like, we are the agents. He is the father. We are the child. He's the director. And accepting that if it comes to choosing between my way and his way, God help me choose his way. To be honest with you, my strategy is usually, okay, I'll choose your way, and then once I'm done doing that, I'm going to squeeze in as much of my way as possible. Like, okay, here's what your plan is, and now I'm going to stick in a fun thing here and what I want to do here. But then I end up exhausted, and then with a broken foot. But and then the action steps 4 through 9. When I started writing my list of resentments, I thought, literally, you guys, I had notebooks full of resentments. Like, it was ridiculous. And it's partly because I'm neurotic and detail-oriented. So if you made one mean face at me back in third grade, I'd remember it. I thought, man, like, I resent every single person I meet. Like, if she's nicer than me, I don't like that. If she's younger than me, I don't like that. If she's prettier than me, don't like that. If he likes her for whatever reason, don't like that. I thought, oh, my gosh, I got to quit meeting people, you know? It's building up my resentment list. I gotta push pause on new individuals until I get to the old list. But accepting that, like, that's how I'm built. And some people are like, oh, I don't mind. I'm pretty thick-skinned. I wish my skin would thicken. Oh, my gosh. But it's actually a spiritual gift, right? Sensitivity. And I heard one person say, like, why do we think sensitivity is a bad thing? Like, shouldn't we want to be a sensitive person who's empathetic? But accepting, looking at my fears, my resentments, and I use the methodology in the big book where I do a turnaround, it's called, where you look at, like, what are you mad at? Why? What's got you so burned up? But then what's your part? And always there's the thorn in there. It's a lie that I'm telling myself or a fear I have. I'll do a quick example. I'm trying to think of a recent resentment. Oh, this is a silly one. So at home, like, I think I took out the trash, but I didn't put it in a trash bag. So when I got home, instead of, like, putting a trash bag in the trash can, my husband just left the banana peel perched on the edge of the trash can. And I'm like, what is that? Like, and long-term, he was just, like, being funny. But I thought, why would you do that? Like, now you know I've got to put the trash bag in. So regardless, now I look back and laugh because it's kind of funny, but like my lies there is that he's not respectful, I'm a victim, I'm the only one that can do this, I have to do it right, like he doesn't love me, if he loved me he would have put a trash light in the trash can. And I'm just like using a small example to show you what goes on in my head, and then I'm immediately angry, blah blah blah, and so I turn that around and saying like, I'm not a victim. The truth is, God help me to believe, I'm not a victim. I have choices. I don't think he was trying to be disrespectful. And even if he was, like, my value comes from God. It's a small thing. Put it in proportion. So that's just a little example of how to turn something around. So that's step four. But then we look at our fears, look at our sex idea, which we don't talk about much, but that's super important because this disease manifests in weird ways. And a lot of it's selfishness, thinking another person can solve our problems, and being anorexic with relationships. And that, like, that's a big deal. I think in our culture we get such mixed messages that we really need to seek what God's ideal is when it comes to sexuality for each person. And for some topics that's an outside issue, but the Big Book talks about, like, looking at what is unselfish, how can I be loving and kind and tolerant? So what does that mean? Not just in a, like, a sexual relationship, but also in a friendship, in a family, at work. How does being in relationship and being humble, but not getting into codependency stuff look? So getting ready for God to remove that, 5, 6, 7, asking God to do that. That's an acceptance of God into our lives. 8 and 9, admitting that I've done wrong, and being willing to make amends for that. And that's humbling. And being also accepting that some people, when I made amends with my sister, she laughed at me. When I made amends with my brother, he cried. So, like, accepting their reaction, their response, and that they're each at different walks of life. And then 10, just continue to do this and take this inventory, because it's just like cleaning a house. Like, it will get messy again. The furnace is going to go out. Like, there's going to be big stuff and small stuff. And if that happens in my spiritual house, it's not that I've done something wrong. It's just that's life. That's being a human being. It's going to happen. What else? So we're at 10, 11. That's a big one for acceptance, because for to pray only for knowledge of God's will for me and power to carry that out, that's accepting that he knows, or however you want to, God, as you understand God, knows better than I do, and that, and it, like, an acceptance of I might not get what I want, and that's going to be okay. Like, another big lie I have is if I just get what I want, then I'll be happy, and that has not proven true, but it's a very powerful illusion. Similar, all of us can relate to this, that the lie that if I had the food I want, then I'd be okay. Or if I could just be normal with food, that's the solution. And even if, well, first of all, to debunk that lie, like, I don't want to be normal with food. I want to eat what I want without consequence. That's what I think that means. But people who are normal with food, like, they push away the dessert and they don't care. Like, I heard somebody say, oh, I don't want that dessert, it's too rich for me. I was like, is that English? Too rich for you? Like, is that a thing? Do people think that? Like, oh, that's too much? I'm like, what does that mean? I've never had that. Or, but to only pray for knowledge of God's will for me and power to carry that out. And then as a result of doing those steps, we have a spiritual awakening. For me, we have to preface the steps with getting abstinent. That's what the Big Book says. Not categorically, but that the treatment, the medicine is better taken when your mind is clear and you're sobered up. Otherwise, if you're still in the food and you're trying to work the steps, like, it's going to cause some mess. And your fourth step is going to be kind of crazy, because you're in the food fog still. But if you work the steps, you're clean and clear, then you can have a spiritual awakening, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. It is a lifelong journey. There is no perfect. My food can be clean and clear, but in terms of, like, oh, I'm never going to have to make an amend again, or I'm never going to have to, like, work on a life issue again, like, that's just not going to happen. We have that spiritual awakening. We try to carry the message, practice these principles, and then do service and pass it on. And then I want to talk about a couple other, like, auxiliary things in terms of accepting the treatment of this disease. One is, like, those characteristics of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are so critical. I also wanted to talk about how part of this disease, at least this form of the disease, and disease might manifest in a bunch of different forms. My self-seeking behaviors tend to be withdrawal, obsession, depression, self-pity, and other persons might be financial overspending or anger outbursts. Like, so it shows up each for a different person. And addiction, you know, there's so many substances people can get addicted to. But usually with this disease comes some body image stuff or, you know, weight stuff. So for that, like, just to acknowledge that that is usually, not always, but usually part of this disease, and thinking the lie I tell myself is what I look like determines my worth. And the truth, in our culture, that's true. But in God's eyes, that's not true. And then also our culture and I sometimes have the lie that the thinner, the better, which can be dangerous when you start to get into the anorexic side and you think, if I could just get that number to here, then I'll be okay. And maybe the number gets there and you get a little quick fix off that. But then you're like, what about this number? You know? So, part of my acceptance of this treatment is, like, I surrender my weight to my sponsor. There was a while that I was weighing too low and I wanted to weigh too low. And she, like, we adjusted my food plan to get me back to a healthier weight. And I still have to have time with that, which might sound weird. Like, if I'm coming from being 50 or 60 pounds heavier, you think, I just think, oh, thank God, I'm lucky. Like, yay, God, good job. But, you know, that lie, the thinner, the better, let's push it as far as we can, be as extreme as we can. So my acceptance is, I'm going with what she wants my weight to be, not me. I'm going with, somebody said, pray to want to be healthy more than you want to be thin. Like, that, this is to me about health. And the other day somebody said, God wants us well. God wants us healthy for the most part. I think, like, there's obviously diseases and issues in the world. But for the most part, like, God wants us healthy and well. And if I follow God's guidance, I get to that place of healthy and well. But she said it's the pathway to get there that we always seem to have trouble with, that I don't want it to look like this. I want to do this instead. And why doesn't this give me that result? Well, that was the pathway I needed to get, but I just didn't want to. And it's a process. Like, surrender is a process. Acceptance is a process. I still do sometimes, like, beat myself up for not being so nice, or beat myself up for not getting it quickly, or, like, force myself to want to surrender. And if I just really, really try to surrender, I wanted to end. How much time do I have left now?
3 minutes and 34 seconds.
Nice. Perfect. I wanted to end with a couple, like, stories of surrender. And none of these I planned for. They just kind of happened. And that's kind of this weird, intangible paradox thing where you have to both surrender, but you can't force it, but you have to take actions, but you also have to just accept. And so it's kind of this tricky, weird situation, but there are three situations that I thought of when it came to, like, critical acceptance situations. One, I had just gotten abstinent, gotten my 90 days, and I was in the Boston area visiting, like, my sponsor and some folks, and they were having, like, this get-together, and somebody had written a song using the lyrics of the Serenity Prayer, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't stand it, you know? It was like when you're new and everything's weird and you think it's a cult and what are these people doing? But I remember being like, all right, if this is what I'm supposed to do, all right. And so I went to the bathroom and I, like, got on my knees and said the third step. I'm like, all right, I guess this is my life. And I said to my sponsor, like, crying, but I just love food. And I remember so clearly, she said, Mandy, food does not love you back. And I was like, wow. What? You know, it's, and she's saying that third step prayer. And then a few months after that, I was still struggling. I was with my family in Wisconsin visiting, and so I hadn't been doing my regular meetings and was kind of out of the loop. And I just, literally, the food started talking to me. It felt like my aunt, I think she's an addict too, and she had all this food out. And it was Christmas time and the holiday season, and I just, like, I thought, I'm going to quit program. I just can't do this. Like, I didn't, in the morning, I usually get down on my knees, ask God for an abstinent day, take my quiet time, and I didn't do any of that. I just called my sponsor, and I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And she's like, Mandy, don't make that decision right now. You're, like, on the holidays with your family, at a family reunion. That's a bad time to make a decision. She said, just for today, like, just try it today. So after I got the phone with her, I got down on my knees, did my quiet time, did the routine. Finally, a couple days later, we went home, and it took a while to feel back to normal, but when we're on vacation, when we're in those Bermuda triangles, just don't make any major decisions. But I have to remind myself of that too, because it's almost harder work sometimes on vacation because everybody is kicking back and relaxing, but we still got to work our program. Just like if we were diabetic, we'd still have to take the insulin or whatever. And the last story I wanted to end with, this is around that same time period, because I struggled a lot, as you can tell, with doubt, not wanting to do this. Is this really the only way to do this? Surely there's got to be a different, better way. But I was on the phone with an outreach phone call and just saying, like, I don't think I want to do this. I haven't tried any other way of doing OA except this way with the structure that I've talked about. And she's like, well, maybe you're right. Maybe there is a better way, a different way for you. This might not be the way for everybody. And she kind of called my bluff because I thought, oh, okay. I thought she's just going to try to convince me. But I was still like, what do I do? And a couple things. I remember I would just pray for the truth, and that's never gone wrong. If I just say, okay, whatever's out there, I'm not sure what I even believe about God, but I just pray for the truth, like, it'll take me to the right path. And then I went down these stairs, and this gentleman was at the bottom of the stairs, and I never saw him before or since, and probably in his 50s or so, and he held the door open for me, clear from the top of the stairs all the way down, and he just said to me, doors will open for you. And I thought, what? Like, and I don't, like, that could be a coincidence, but I don't really believe in coincidences, and he probably, you know, but I just thought, and it gives me chills to this day, so I still remember that, like, and this is a hard path that we trudge, but it's worth it, so thanks.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Mandy. You got to talking, and now I remember you. 12 months goes by. I do have the gift of amnesia. All right, so timeshares from the floor in the audience are 3 minutes each. We ask that you stick to the topic of this workshop when sharing. Introduce yourself. You'll have 3 minutes to share. Those who are two hatters are asked to share only your OA. Would anyone like to share? Or does anyone have any questions for Mandy? Don't be shy.
I'm Diane. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Diane.
But the way you were talking, you know, and I thought, oh, she's not going to miss anything, you know. But what you did was you kept my attention. I was focused on everything. And, you know, trying to still control and not control. You know, I told a friend this morning, I came into this program 70 pounds lighter, and I've been gaining ever since because I've tried to control it, and it's not working. So thank you for you've got my brain going now, so I'll be thinking about everything you said.
Thank you.
Thanks, Diane.
Okay. My name's Jordan. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jordan.
I'm like you. I get really excited when I start talking about this stuff, and then someone will come up to me after the meeting, and I'll, like, run away as soon as I can. right? That always reminds me of, like, what a miracle it is. That there's a bunch of compulsive overeaters sitting in a room together, like, trying to recover instead of eating alone. It just keeps blowing me away, you know? I haven't been doing that. Been doing this that long. But that idea, when that idea was introduced to me, that this is a disease, I always thought that if I just gave it a little bit more will, that I could just, like, will myself into eating better, you know? And I tried over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. I wasn't a dieter. to this day, I've never been on a diet, actually. I would just try to, like, will myself into eating better, you know? And nothing worked until I got entirely abstinent, until I eliminated those alcoholic foods from my diet. And don't get me wrong, that shit wasn't easy. Like, Wendy says that it's easy to get clean from the food. I don't agree with her. That shit was not easy. To put down... to put down my best and only friend, that was not easy at all. And I'm not saying that it is. But I am saying that once it's down, because I tried putting it down and then not working a program, that didn't work. This obsessive brain of mine, the mental twist, brought me back to the food. That's when I really understood what it meant to be powerless over food. Because I was ready to stay abstinent the rest of my life. Like, I was ready to will the shit out of it. And stay abstinent the rest of my life. And I wanted to with every fiber of my being, and it didn't work. I ended up back in the food without even knowing it and unwilling to admit it because I don't know what it is, man. Powerlessness is, like, that's it. That's the bottom of the barrel. Like, it doesn't even matter the circumstances around it, none of it. Because when I came in this time around, I was not at my top weight. Like, I stand before you, I'm guessing about 100 pounds lighter than what my top weight was. I don't know what my top weight was for sure, but based on clothes sizes and stuff, I'm thinking it's around 100 pounds. I came in this time around in the middle of a relapse, having gained back 40 of the 70 I had lost, and I guess what I'm getting at, that sort of revelation that this is a disease that, like, it has nothing to do with my willpower. It has nothing to do with me being a bad person, because I really did. I thought that overweight people were bad people, and that, like, I was one of them. That if I could just be better, then, like, this would be different somehow. If I could just work a little harder, then this would be different. Like, it's not a question of will at all in any way, shape, or form. But it really is a disease, and this solution really does work. The whole, like, God thing really does work, you know? So it's just wild. It's wild. That's it.
Thanks, Jordan. Anyone else? Well, I'm Jen. I'll go ahead and share. Accepting the treatment of this disease, I accepted that I had a problem with eating and exercising. That was how I came here, was underweight. And I sat in a room full of people and said I was a compulsive overeater. That was really odd for a long time. Accepting the treatment, I heard that there was a solution, but I didn't accept the power behind the solution, and that was God. And I think that's the other part of the piece for me. You know, there's the steps, there's traditions, there's all this good stuff. There's God, may you find him now. Like, that is like the biggest statement in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. May I find him now. I found God the first 11 months of this program. I found him in a man. He was 6'5". He was recovered from drugs and alcohol. He was a badass, tattooed mother, you know what. He rode a Harley, and he was my higher power. And that's what I found the first 11 months in this room. And, you know, I called my sponsor once a week. I met with her face-to-face once a week, but I saw him every day, right? And that was it for me. Like, I saw the solutions through the 12 steps. I went to meetings. I did everything I was supposed to do except for finding the one who has the power. I gave it over to another human being. So for me, the treatment of this disease was not finding the steps, not finding the rooms, not finding the phone, not finding the writing. It was finding God. And I'll never forget when the bottom of the box got really, really wet. You know how when a box gets wet and it starts to get soggy? That was me. And then one day the bottom of the box finally fell out. And I was in a parking lot after I had binged for 3.5 hours going to convenience store to convenience store, eating everything I could find that had a label that said, no, you can't have that. And I finally sat under a street lamp. There was a dumpster to my right, but what was in the right-hand seat of my car was wrappers from every convenience store that I had just been to for the last 3.5 hours. And on the other side was the vomit outside the other side of the door. And that's when I knew I was desperate, and I had to find something. And I had found a sponsor, and I had found the rooms, but I hadn't found God. And the light on that lamp above me was like the sparkling and the twinkling that I was like, what? And I looked up, and that was God. And he said, find me now, Jennifer Marie. And I surrendered. And I picked up the phone, and I called the man who was sponsoring me, who continues to take me through the step works today. Thank you, God. And he said, I said, what do I do? I said, this is where I've been. And he said, I want you to get to a meeting. Oh, gosh. Seriously? That's it. That's all he said. He's a man of few words. So he said, get to a meeting. And so I turned the phone off. I just shut the door in my car. I drove home. I looked up on the internet, and there's no AA meetings, no OA meetings that hour. So I went to an AA meeting, and I studied the big book, the 12 and 12, for 120 days straight. And I read the truth, and I found God. And the coolest thing for me today is when I see others finding God. And I see the twinkle in their eye. You too can recover. That's the most amazing thing. So grab a hold of somebody who's got what you want this weekend. Get abstinent. Find a food plan. Get somebody else to determine your food for you, because we can't do it. I couldn't do it. And find God. There's no other way. Does anybody else have anything? All right. Whew. Let's circle up, hold hands, and say the serenity prayer, shall we? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it.